And welcome back to Coast with the Big Three, Gerald Celente, Catherine Austin Fitz, George Ure, all participating in our special roundtable discussion tonight. And you're going to join the group, too, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Final hour to go with our special three guests, and this is what we will do with our phone calls. You select the person that you want to answer your question, whether it's Gerald, Catherine, or George, and then I'm going to also have the other two answer the question when the person you selected is done with the answer. So we will do that. But I have a question for the three of them right now, and Gerald, I'll start with you. As we all know, when the economy starts to slow down, somehow a war always seems to pop up. Could we have a World War III?
Well, if we have a World War III, it'll be, I believe, as Einstein had feared. He said, I don't know how the Third World War will be fought, but the Fourth World War will be fought with sticks and stones.
Yeah, he's right.
And I have been forecasting when all else fails, they take you to war. And yes, I believe that the lunatics in chief, and you name the countries, they've done it before, they'll do it again. They're, you know, psychopaths and sociopaths will lead people to death and destruction. So, yes, I do fear that.
Catherine, how about you?
Well, I'm not so much afraid of sovereign governments. And I think right now that we've seen in the Ukraine, the corporations have been modifying, saying, listen, this is really bad for business. My concern is we're in a world, George, where the weaponry, very powerful weaponry, is now moved into the hands of private players and organized crime. And so our problem is going to be that, you're not going to be able to control the spread of weaponry, and all it takes is one small group of people to really wreak havoc.
George, here?
I think we've got a hangover from the industrial age. It came out of England. In the 1800s, that special treatment was given to the means of manufacturing. And with robotics coming down the road, we have an incredible ability to overproduce darn near anything. The problem is, until government comes to terms with taxation of equipment at rates that are equivalent to the humans that get replaced, we're going to keep going back to the war cycle so that those who own machinery and industrial bases will be able to continue profiteering. Once machines, I think, are taxed sufficiently so that the machine versus human becomes an unweighted decision rather than something which is supported by tax subsidies, depreciations, and so forth. I think until that is changed, and that's unlikely, I think the war cycle is a lock-in.
Okay. I'm afraid I believe that too. Let's go to the phones, and again, you ask the person, and then the other two will respond after that person has answered your question. Let us pick it up by going to Cornelius in Louisiana on the wild card line. Cornelius, you're number one.
Yeah, what's happening? How y'all are there?
Good.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine, George, and Gerald. I wanted to make kind of a statement first. I know the other George had brought out about the billionaire Koch brothers, where they got a billionaire on the left, George Soros trying to destroy us, and also Bill Gates with this Common Core. So what my question is, if y'all hadn't looked at it, this Common Core that they're trying to force on these on the school like a national education type deal, you think that will destroy the country? And I'll take my answer off the air.
And I believe he wants to start with you, Mr. Ure.
Well, I think the destruction of America is a much longer term process. I think it the changes in curriculum, that's a show length answer. I just can't boil it down into one or two cogent thoughts. I mean, it's been so ongoing. The change of focus from reading, writing, arithmetic to everything but, and then getting rid of industrial arts so that people can't make the things themselves. The taking away from us the ability to invent, create, and prosper without government has been pretty systematically denied.
I remember we used to have to take industrial arts. I wasn't particularly fond of the course, but it was fun to do.
It was fun to do, and it gives you the skills to be able to create, adapt, improvise, and overcome. And that's one of the American core values. But when you get rid of industrial arts training, when you start bringing correctness training in, it really becomes a kind of training of the youth core.
Catherine, how about you?
Cornelius, I know nothing about Common Core. I will say that one of the great proofs of victory by the American people was the insistence upon homeschooling. And I come from a county where there's tremendous amounts of homeschooling, and they're doing exactly what George and George are talking about. They're, you know, kids learn how to build houses, they learn how to fix cars, they learn how to grow gardens, and do unbelievable practical skills, including, you know, how to make apps for mobile phones, all the way up to software. So I think we need curriculum that teaches kids how to engage and understand the economic process and do for themselves. And it's really contingent on all of us to try and make sure our kids get that education. We can't depend on the schools. And I think one of the reasons that I know of that homeschool is growing tremendously is many, many parents understand that.
Mr. Salente.
I agree with both of them. I don't have a lot to add other than, along with the industrial arts, I would say the arts as well, because I believe that art is the way of finding the true meaning of the human spirit. And when you talk about the Renaissance after the Dark Ages, the Black Plague, rather, the arts were prominent. And to me, we need some de Medicis out there to bring back some spirit into the human soul, which I believe has been lost. And, of course, art is beyond, you know, just painting. And I agree with Catherine and George as well. Particularly with Catherine, with the homeschooling, and this is a different age, and it's the internet age, and you're seeing more and more digital learning, I hated every day of school. Just to make it clear, I ran away growing up in the Bronx. I crossed the Boston Post Road at 4.5 years old, running away from high school. So I'm all in favor of homeschooling and a new curriculum.
Catherine, you're with me on some of the events that we do around the country. Do you notice anything differently when you go from city to city or state to state about people and their reaction to things?
Well, I think people are getting getting much smarter. There's a real, sufficient alienation from the system to start to say, hey, we're on our own. It is what it is. How do I start to solve problems? And what I'm seeing, George, is more and more entrepreneurs just say, okay, you know, I'm going to start looking for ways of creating businesses that solve the real problem. So there's a letting go of the old system, and there's a turning and starting to work on the problems themselves. At the same time, I agree with some of what we've been saying earlier, which is people are really depressed about the, you know, the financial grind of putting an enormous amount of money into taxes, into state and local and federal government, and instead you're basically financing a machinery that's turning around and draining you. So the financial drain, and that's part of what's been harvesting the middle class, is enormous and I think very, very tiresome.
First-time caller now, Mike is in Northport, Florida. Mike, your question, and who would you like to answer it first?
Well, I'd like to speak with Gerald, actually.
All right.
The first thing I'd like to say, hey, Gerald, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. I was raised mainly by my grandmother, who was from New York. She grew up on 139th Street. It was a real Depression era mentality. So, you know, wasting food, this kind of thing was just crazy. Financing anything was just, insane. And we didn't do that kind of thing, you know. Now, I saw a bumper sticker a long time ago, and it stuck in my head. It said, politicians prefer unarmed peasants. And I think it's just so true. And I have just a couple other things I want to say, and then I'll ask a question and take you off the air, okay?
Sure.
Okay. I mean, obviously, the fiat currency and the stock market, it's a big Ponzi scheme. I've been hit by it. Every time I make a trade, it just goes down on me immediately. If I short it, it goes up like gangbusters. It's to the point where I wonder if it's rigged.
You can't win.
Hey, Mike, here's a note. Mike Johnson has $2,000 in a margin account. Sell, you know. But it's crazy. But the smart growth and the hobbit homes, the regionalism and the police state that we live in now, it's crazy. I'm 42. When I've watched things go from, like, the 80s mentality to what we have now, and it's just an atrocity. It's horrible. And the questions I really have is, one is a humorous one, and I'll leave that for the end. But the main question I really want to know is, we're people. And what do people do when they're in trouble, like our country is? We ask our neighbors for a favor. Why don't we ask Canada and Mexico for a favor? And the second question is, the humorous one, look at Rick Scott, Governor Rick Scott of Florida. Does he not look like an alien to you? I mean, look at the guy.
I love it. All right, thanks. Let's go with you first, Gerald. Why not ask our neighbors for help?
Well, you know, we don't need to ask our neighbors for help. We have everything that we need here. And to me, I mentioned this to you on a show previously, I think the future is with a self-sustaining economy. Again, when did things work better? You know, Bill Clinton is making the rounds now. Again, just as I mentioned that they're said bringing George Bush out back into the public to make him more presentable.
Yeah.
And because let's not forget, he was booed off the stage on Inauguration Day with Obama. And now they're making him.
That's right. And plus, he's going to be used for the Jeb Bush campaign, isn't he?
Probably. So they're making him look presentable. On the other side, Bill Clinton's making the rounds just at Georgetown last week, saying how wonderful, and, you know, Al Gore, of course, invented the internet.
Sure.
And what a great job he did. So I'm going back to answering the question, how could it change? Do we go to our neighbors? No. Let's put back things in place that make the country work before. Let's, you know, to me, I mean, NAFTA was a disaster. And it's not free trade. I think either George or Catherine was talking about, you know, going to underdeveloped nations and using, you know, cheap labor and you know, bringing the product back and put back the laws in place. The Robinson-Patman Act, the Sherman Antitrust Act, the Clayton Antitrust Act that gave the entrepreneurs the ability to compete. So I don't think we have to go to our neighbors. I think we could have a self-sustaining economy. As for that guy in Florida, you look at the whole thing. You know, they say that politics is show business for ugly people. So whether or not he looks like an alien or not, he probably fits in.
Now, you were talking about they're pulling out George W. Bush and Bill Clinton. Where'd this Monica Lewinsky thing come from all of a sudden?
Again, they're clearing the deck. And that's what I'm trying to say. They're pulling the things out of the closet that they know that they're going to have to face.
Yes.
So they're pushing it behind us.
Good point. All right, Catherine, your turn. Our neighbors.
I agree. They are trying to clean out all the garbage. Here's the thing. You have 3,100 counties in this country. And the federal government, the sources and uses of federal government appropriations, credit, and contracts in those communities is being run outside of the law. And until and unless we return that money to lawful control and internal financial controls, you know, ain't going to be no solutions. Doesn't matter who's the president. Now, it does matter who your state and local officials are. It does matter who your congressmen are, because they're going to control the power of the purse. But the real issue before us is how we get that money returned to, you know, to lawful management and control. And that's the issue that's got to be dealt with. And frankly, I see the presidential campaign as completely irrelevant to that.
George, you're up.
I think everybody in the United States ought to read up on the works of Walter Burian and the difference between actual accounting and budget accounting. He's got a website, CAFR1, I think it is, .com, CAFR, which stands for the Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports Required at All Levels of Government. Some comply quickly, some eventually get around to it. But essentially, government kind of runs two sets of books. They talk poor in the budget, and when you tear into the real accounting, they're far from broke. And I think Catherine would second that, would you, Catherine?
Oh, I agree completely.
Okay, let's go to Dale now in Arlington, Washington, west of the Rockies. Dale, go ahead. Dale, you with
Hello?
Us? Yeah, go ahead, Dale.
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to your show a couple nights ago, and you had a guy on there talking about, well, the gentleman that had the $27.5 trillion.
Yes, Leo Wanta was his name.
Okay, and I thought it interesting that he was talking about how he thought that he was saying that the Federal Reserve is not legal, and how the Bush family legally aren't supposed to be running for you know, any kind of governments and stuff from past things that their grandfather or father did. And, you know, and I was just wondering, what's the deal with the Federal Reserve being illegal, or, you know, who started it and how did it start?
Who wants that? Gerald?
Well, I wouldn't call myself an expert on it, but what I do know is that it was the major issue in many presidential elections in the 1800s not to have a central bank.
J.P. Morgan helped start it.
Yeah, and it was started, of course, what, on Christmas Eve 1913, when there was hardly anybody there in D.C. And then, ironically or not, shortly after that, World War One begins, and I believe income tax also began with that as well.
Will we ever get rid of that?
And probably not. And then, to me, the Federal Reserve is an illegal operation. It's a you know what? I have to tell you, for many years, I used to believe the line that it was a quasi-government.
We all did. Everybody. You hear the word federal, you think it's part of the U.S. government.
Yeah, so I believed it. So I believe it's totally illegal. I resent having these bankers running my life and destroying it. So, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Eddie, you other two want to take a stab at it, George, here?
It may technically be illegal, but what's the alternative? Congress is not exactly inspired when it comes to quick reaction, sharp thinking, seeing ahead clearly, and keeping things going. So, yeah, I'm skeptical of it. I'm not pleased with it, but what's the alternative?
Let's take just a few moments here, the three of you. Catherine, tell people where they can find you, even though we have links. And, of course, you've got your book, Dylan Reed, In the Aristocracy of Stock Profits. Go ahead.
I published the Solari Report, and you can find us at solari.com, S-O-L-A-R-I.com.
George, you're?
UrbanSurvival.com, which is Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and PeopleNomics.com, which is where I get into our trading models and more in-depth treatment of things. That's PeopleNomics.com.
And you, Mr. Salente?
TrendsJournal.com, TrendsJournal.com. And George, I would also like to say, yes, I believe the Federal Reserve is illegal, because Article 1, Section 8, Clause 5 of the Constitution makes it really clear it's Congress's role, not a private organization.
Yep.
So true. Hey, Catherine, remember the first time you hit the title of your book? I really butchered that, didn't I? Not anymore. I got it down to a science.
Very good, George.
We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take final phone calls with our three, Gerald Salente, Catherine Austin Fitz, and George Ure. And as they've all mentioned, all their websites and their incredible work linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. As for us, just like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can do that by just going to our website, coasttocoastam.com. On our next Coast to Coast program, split show for you, we're going to talk a little bit about DNA and how it radically can change a human being. And then later on, we will be talking about the Monroe Institute's black box. You're going to love that. We'll be back in a moment with final phone calls here with Gerald Salente, Catherine Austin Fitz, and George Ure on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Gerald Salente. I know you don't give specific investment advice, but I'm seriously thinking of buying silver futures. I think that's going to go through the roof one day.
I wouldn't buy right now. That would be my I've been buying since 1978.
Wow.
And I'm holding everything I have. If I were to buy now, I wouldn't buy futures because, you know, you're blown out of the market with that kind of thing. I would buy for possession. And a good friend of mine has, to me, the best strategy that I ever heard. Each month, he buys what he can afford in gold and silver and just puts it away.
Puts it away, no matter
what.
When
you look over the long term, boy, it averages out nicely.
Yeah, it sure does. George, you agree?
Absolutely. I think the key thing to remember is if it ain't in your hands, you don't own it.
Where do you put it if you buy that much?
Well, I can answer that. If you go in anybody's house, it's filled with a lot of junk. When they're going to walk in there, there's the gold. It's right in the, it's behind all those paint cans and other crap that you have laid.
It's in the safe in the wall, right?
Oh, you could put it so many places. You just don't tell anybody.
All right, let's go to Jeff in La Quinta, California. Jeffrey, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, guys. This is kind of off what I was going to say, but when I was a little kid, my dad used to bring home bags of change, and he'd say, pull the silver out, son, and that's back, 1964, 68, when they quit making silver coins. And so I got bags and bags and bags of silver coins. But the reason I called is, I'm 56. I'm a disabled veteran. I take care of my 85-year-old mother here.
Good
you know.
For you. And thanks.
And,
for
and I got it to prop her up. I tell her, you know, Mom, you lived during the best era, and I got to tell you, I did too. When you respected adults, when education was education, et cetera. I just heard that 1 in 4 Californians that graduate can do math proficiently, and 4 in 10 can read. Now, that's your work. That's your work base, and then you put the rest of the people down. You get them fighting about race. You get them fighting about anything else. The haves, the have-nots. I think that this president has done what he said he was going to do, and that's fundamentally change the can-do attitude of America. And I like what all of your panelists have said, because all of it has a point of hope that all you have to do, set your sights and go after it. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of these people have the fundamentals to go after it. And then therefore the government gives them their excuse. It's because you were raised wrong, or because of this, or because of that. But my original question was for Catherine. And, you know, I mean, how can you talk about global warming when they're spraying stuff over my house every day, these chemtrails? I mean, it's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. And then if you take a spectrum of since man's been on Earth, and you take the 200 years we've been here, I don't really think we've messed it up that bad. So anyway, thank you very much, and I'll take my questions, my answers off the air.
All right, go ahead, Catherine.
Well, I'm not sure what the question was.
Well, I guess it was chemtrails.
Well, to me, chemtrails is a very big question. I don't think we understand what's in them completely and why they're being sprayed. And I think it's an unanswered question that really goes to the heart of who's in charge and what's really going on in this planet. So I think it's very important. I also think it's having an unbelievably dampening impact on the economy. I did want to mention one thing, George, mm-hmm. and that is I think there are a lot of opportunities in the economy. So I'd just like to say a few words on that before we close, because particularly if they're young people listening, I do think that if we focus on the areas where there are going to be opportunities, I think there's a lot to be done. The first thing, and it's one of the most positive things I see going on, is for many years technology is what happened around Boston or what happened in Silicon Valley. And now we're seeing technology move out into the heartland, into very basic industries. And I do think we're getting a revival of manufacturing, but in the railroads and in the utilities and in all these areas, we're starting to see new technology move in exciting ways. And I think it offers a lot of opportunities to young people. The other thing is we're finally starting to see renewable energy become competitive. You know, there's very good news on the economics of solar, and we really may get a breakthrough, particularly in the battery area. So I think there's great opportunity. We're talking earlier about the importance of space. I hope rather than go to war, we decide instead to have some massive space race. I want to see the kids in my family travel the stars. So whether it's the suborbital platforms and manufacturing and exploration, big opportunities. And another big one, if we're all going to be unemployed, is do it yourself. The economics of doing more for ourselves is getting much better. And if you look at the new tools, and, you know, I encourage everybody to go look at the maker movement that's sort of springing up all over the country, you know, now's the time to start learning to do more with themselves. And finally, the mobile revolution is here. We're reorganizing the consumer markets globally, and that affords lots of opportunities to entrepreneurs. So it's re-engineering a lot of people out of retail businesses, but it's creating a whole new other. So there's tremendous opportunities for kids, and that gets back to what the caller was saying about curriculum, because we really need to focus our time on learning about the areas where there is opportunity. Finally, as George was saying, learn how the money works, particularly in your place. If you learn how the money works around you, you know, it's you get a lot harder to trick.
I was at my watch guy today. I was getting some batteries put in some watches that had died. And we were talking about Timex, that old company. And he said,
I'm looking at my Timex watch. I love Timex.
Yeah, he said they're all made in China now.
Yeah.
Company's based in Little Rock, Arkansas. And, but you know, when they first came out, they were the original advertisers on television, for crying out loud.
I didn't know that.
I would guess that they were all made in the United States then.
Oh, I'm sure.
Are we ever going to, Gerald Celente, get manufacturing back here?
Only, you know, they talk about manufacturing coming back, but when you look at a lot of the manufacturing also, it's coming back, I mean, from Chinese companies opening up and other companies opening up around the country. To me, it has to go back to, you know, pre-NAFTA days, as I said before, whether it's tariffs or restructuring what was before. And I agree with Catherine talking about, you know, the opportunities there. We did a story in this Trends Journal. It's called Fab Labs, Fabricating Our Future, How to Access to Technology Can Fuel Innovation, and all these places, these maker spaces that are opening up around the country. And the other opportunities I see is with the elderly. We're an aging population, and America's graying at a much faster rate than they had anticipated. So there's going to be a lot of people needing a lot of help. You know, the baby boomers particularly, as they're aging, and anything having to do with whole health healing, and food is the future. Food and water, clean food, clean water, is going to be more demand than supply.
I think so, too. Let's go west. Aben is in Selma, Oregon. Welcome to the program, Aben. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to speak a little bit about worker ownership and sustainable economics.
Okay.
My 18-year study of the Mondragon Cooperative Corporation of the Basque community in Spain, I noticed that there was a real problem with the disparity in wealth having to do with non-participation by the workers and non-ownership by workers. So basically, I had to have a good look at economics, and turn-of-the-century political economist Henry George describes wealth as a return for labor in his book, Progress and Poverty. He uses the gardener as the simplest example. The return the gardener gets for his labor is measured in abundance. That is wealth. And he says the same holds true in business. Now, there are four entities in our society that create economics: the worker, investor, consumer, and the public. But you see, the investor owns and controls the wealth. And worker only gets wages. So, you know, I wrote a Workers' Democratic Bill of Rights through my study that where the Mondragon Cooperative Corporation, where 10% of their capital profits go to the health, education, and welfare of the worker and the immediate family. And also that, you know, whereas the consumer, you know, they also have consumer co-ops as well, they're, you know, in the complex. And the need for public tariffs and more local economics is a big part of all that. So I am going to go to you guys' sites, and I would like to communicate with you and show you my Workers' Democratic Bill of Rights. It's getting, we've gotten over 30,000 hits now, and I've translated it into three different languages and posted all over Occupy in the world.
Okay, and all of them except their emails on their websites. Catherine, are you still talking permaculture, pushing that?
Still talking permaculture, and I'm still talking community venture funds and community crowdfunding to flow equity to small business. what the caller's talking about, George, is, you know, for 50 years, we've been running this planet on debt markets, so debts and derivatives. And the reality is, if we're going to build a peaceful world, we're going to need an equity model. We're going to need to transition to equity. We need equity flowing much more freely to small business and circulating in communities. And this is all part of how do we move to an equity model, because it's one of the most important things. You know, in the United States, we have fairly broad equity ownership, but globally only about 5% of the people in the world own equity. And so this is a very big shift, but it's one if we could make. And I think you have to make it bottom up. You have to make it, you know, community by community, or worker ownership, as your caller was saying. So what he's hitting on is an incredibly important part of real change. We're going to have to go to an equity model if we want things to work.
Let's go to Chris in Riverview, Florida now. Let's get you in here. Chris, go ahead.
Hello. I'd like to applaud your three guests for they have brought up some important questions.
They sure have.
My question is anyone familiar with the Green New Deal? If so, which of the four pillars of this proposal do they feel most agreeable to their vision of a possible national discussion for a dual point of action our nation can implement in 2016, for example, but not limited to jobs for all, Medicare for all, taking money out of politics, reinstating the Glass-Steagall Act, free college education, or a student loan bailout?
George, here, you want to take a jump at that?
The one I'd vote for right away would be take the money out of politics. I think that the objective of the political process should be to find the best and brightest who will make the best, most constitutionally compliant decisions for the common good of the entire country, not just divide and conquer into different interest groups, get it funded by outside forces, and then go profiteer off it. So I think it begins with changing the fundamental structure in that area. Is it likely? No. Is it something to work for? Heck yes.
Let's, before we take final calls, I want to have enough time for each one of you for a quick wrap-up, starting with you, Gerald Celente, about the future over the next, let's say, 3 years.
Well, it's definitely, you know, on the front burner is going to be economics. And I think the big one to see, everybody should watch very closely if they want to see what's going to look like, is China. And a lot going on there, both in their shadow banking. Will they have a real estate bubble? And what are they going to do with all that debt that they're holding, the $1.5 trillion in treasuries, and the geopolitics of that area? Because as we speak right now, there's tensions going on between China now and Vietnam, with China just pulling a drilling rig in the Spratly Islands. And the other areas, of course, are going to be with the economy in the United States. I don't see any recovery at all, and I'm concerned that as things decline much more, things may start turning more militaristic in controlling the people, and the people becoming more violent in not wanting to be controlled.
Wrap up for you, Catherine.
Well, I was at the Gold Conference a couple of years ago, and someone asked the famous investor Jimmy Rogers if he's worried about peak oil. He said, forget peak oil, it's peak everything. And we're going into a world where, you know, one of three things can happen. The price of commodities can go through the roof, we can go to war, or we can re-engineer to a much more cooperative and much more productive society. Right now, our current wealth globally is 1% of what it could be if we could cooperate. And the question
I would pick that they probably will go to war.
I'm going to, you know, something, faith is the substance of things hoped for but not yet seen. I'm going to predict we figure out a way for the human race to go produce a lot more wealth.
George, let's let you wrap things up.
Well, I think we're in a great bottoming process. The bond market's been coming down in terms of yields on the 10-year since 1982, 83-ish. We'll go through a difficult period of financial displacement. When the market long-term direction changes, that is likely to cause a lot of turmoil. In terms of how to hedge against that, don't color too far outside the lines in terms of personal finance. I haven't been a huge supporter of Bitcoins. I think they're still going to come down and get a lot cheaper than they are now before they take off again. In terms of education, you can find better deals on education because computer online technology is making it less costly. And keep your eyes open about the surveillance state. I think that anything you do can and will be used against you by someone.
I agree. Gerald Celente, thank you for being on the program.
Oh, thank you for having me. What a great show, and thank you so much for having me on with George and Catherine. You guys are terrific. Thanks so much.
You got it.
You too.
Gerald Celente, Catherine, you too. You take care of yourself. We'll talk to you soon. I understand you're going to be in the area in a couple months, right?
Oh, no. I'm in San Francisco, but I'm going to be down in your studio on July 7th.
That's right. Absolutely.
That's
and thank
right.
you, George. I appreciate everything you do.
It's an honor to be here.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.